Thank you for that. And of course, that music doesn't mean we're on an elevator. It means that it is time for SalesportTalk.com that we do the first hour every Tuesday, the only sailing segment that has a weekly spot on a nationally syndicated show. And as always, joining me co-hosting the segment is Karen Lyle. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great. You know, I can even travel on elevators now.
Double mask, Dr. Fauci. All right, and also joining us in the studio is our friend and America's Cup aficionado, Christopher Kane. So, Chris, let's just get right into it. Last we talked on Tuesday, we were getting ready for what could have been the final race, and it was the final race as the Kiwis dispatched the Italian team and retained the old mug. How did it go in that last race?
Yeah, it's funny because we were all hoping that Jimmy Spithill could pull another miracle off like he did in San Francisco with the comeback. But, you know, Karen and I were talking about it before the race, and we said the problem is the Kiwis kind of did to Jimmy what Jimmy did to them in San Francisco, which is, unfortunately, for Jimmy, that they had sort of wrung all the speed they could out of that boat, and the Kiwis kept finding more and more speed. And, you know, the first 3 days of racing, it was tied the first day, tied the second day, tied the third day. And then the Kiwis found an extra gear. And as much as sailing is about sailors, the cup ultimately is won with speed. And the Kiwis found an extra gear. And as much as the Italians tried to protect a lead every time they had it, unfortunately, when you're in a slower boat, you only have to make one mistake. And the other boat gets past you, and that's what happened to the Italians. But it was still great sailing. I mean, close every race.
It was especially when the points started to go in favor of the New Zealand team. I mean, it was nail biting, wasn't it? I mean, really just keeping the boats just kept changing leads, and you really didn't know how this was going to turn out.
Yeah, it's. At the end, we saw the cup racing we were hoping for, which is lead changes and dramatic moments and contested starts because the boats weren't so terrified of falling off their foils anymore. They'd sort of managed to figure out their boats, and it's great action. And now we go back to a concern I had at the very beginning of this, which is, for the love of God, will you please not change boats again? We've now had four cups in a row with four different types of boats, and one of the side effects of that is you wind up with the same characters skippering the same boats for the same teams every time. So as much as people are getting all worked up right now about, is New Zealand actually going to defend the next one in New Zealand, or are they going to take it somewhere else, my biggest concern is, will you please just stay with the same boat for one cycle? Actually,
Christopher, the latest news is that the new rule for Ineos challenged the defender right after the America's Cup was finished, the new rule is the AC75s have to be accepted as a boat for the next two America's Cups. So we're going to have the same boat, and they're only going to make one boat, and they're trying to reduce the cost so that more people can compete.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's so expensive, because, you know, these syndicates need $30, $40 million just to figure out the design of the boat. And that already means most people can't play. And the great thing about the old America's Cup in the 12 meters is every time a cup was over, syndicates that wanted to challenge for the next cup would go buy all the old boats and start to learn how to sail them. And I'm happy to hear that, although now there's some rigmarole about a one-off race around the Isle of Wight between just the British and the Kiwis. I mean, it's the America's Cup. It's going to be another 3 years of drama again, because that's what we do.
So it's interesting you say, as much as it's about sailors, it is a technology, because, you know, in sports they used to say that, you know, McEnroe would beat you with a wood racket, wouldn't matter what you had, or yep, Tiger Woods could beat you with a 50-year-old pair of golf clubs. As talented as the sailors are, it really is down to the design. So a less talented skipper could beat you because he's basically got the faster ship.
Well, a less talented skipper is not going to make it to the America's Cup. So, I mean, these are top skippers in the world. I compare it to Formula One, where the top racers. I mean, Lewis Hamilton is a phenomenal race car driver, but there's other good ones too. And you saw what happened this season with Ferrari, where one mistake in the engine package pretty much doomed them for the season. Mercedes made one little tweak to their back of the car, and now all of a sudden they look incredibly competitive. And the America's Cup is the same way. Having one of the top crews in the world is table stakes. You do have one of the top skippers. You will have one of the top crews. You will have Olympic sailors and Olympic gold medal winners on your boat. Then you get to the boat itself. So, no, you need to be one of the top dozen skippers in the world to be competitive in the America's Cup, but the boat does matter, and it's as much a technology battle as Formula One is.
I think there's really four factors that play into the into what happens with America's Cup. You have the design, as we talked about, and then you've got the boat itself, because, of course, the boat's crashing and capsized, almost capsizes like the American Magic team. That's going to have an impact. And then you've got the team, but you've also got the wind. And so all of those four factors are just so prominent. I mean, what do you, looking back over these races that we had for the America's Cup, and those different factors, what do you think was really the most exciting moment for you in this series?
I mean, the exciting moment was going into the Cup, there was this narrative that, the low winds are going to benefit the Italians, the higher winds are going to benefit the Kiwis. And it was kind of being set up as Mother Nature is going to decide what's going to happen here. What we saw was two boats that were competitive in all ranges. And that was exciting to see. And pretty remarkable to think that, again, we've said this a billion times now, these aren't just new America's Cup boats. These were brand new boats that had never been sailed before. And the fact that the designers of both these boats got it so right in so many wind conditions was really remarkable. I mean, we were told that in, single-digit winds that the Italians were faster. Did not turn out to be true. We were told as it loaded up, the Italians would fall behind. That didn't really happen either. The Kiwi boat was slightly faster in all points, but these boats were pretty great all-round boats, and I think that was a concern I had. In the lighter winds, these would become really boring races, and that was not the case.
Why is it, Christopher, that we get all new boats? Is it the kind of thing it's like, well, if we're standing still, then we're falling behind. We need to design some. This boat served its purpose. Now, what's the latest thing? Do they feel like if they just sit on the boat that won it all, that they're going to have, like a dinghy compared to what's down the line in 3 years?
Oh, it's a lot worse than that. It's actually in the Defender's best interest to keep changing the boats. Because remember, what happens is the challenger of record, the syndicate that represents all the challengers, and in this case, it's going to be the British going into the next cup. They and the Defender, this being the Kiwis, decide on the design of the boat. And what has always been true is those syndicates have a design advantage because they are learning about these boats before anyone else gets their hands on the rules. It's not a coincidence that the two final boats in the America's Cup were the two syndicates that designed the rule. So there is an advantage to changing the boats every time. It helps the Defender, but it also makes for a much smaller event. It makes for less syndicates that are able to compete. Valencia in 2007, when it went down to Australia after the America's first lost the cup, you had two race courses going simultaneously. There were so many syndicates. I'd like to see more syndicates. I'd like to see multiple American challengers this time around. But it's just too expensive when you start with a clean scratch of paper. But the reality is, it is actually a benefit for the Defender. And that's why you see it happen so many times.
Well, now they have the nationality rule. So for the 37th America's Cup, they're going to, it says, a new crew nationality rule will require 100% of the race crew for each competitor to either be present, a passport holder of the country, the team's yacht club, as well as or physically present in that country for a period of time. But it's making an exception that anyone who sailed on one of the boats recently can continue to be part of that team. So that's going a little bit more of the CLGP direction.
It is, and obviously there's loopholes, and the cup only comes around every 4 years. So if there's somebody you want, you've got time to make them eligible between now and the next Cup. If the Cup was, you know, Sail GP goes every year. So you don't have time to play those tricks in Sail GP. So that's why you see far more nationally centric crews in Sail GP. And by the way, for those who don't know, Sail GP is basically taking smaller versions of the catamarans that were in San Francisco and basically creating a Grand Prix circuit with those boats. And it's very competitive racing, very exciting. But because it's every year, you can't sort of game the system the way you can with a Cup.
There he is, Christopher Kane, joining Karen Lyle and myself. Encourage anyone who has a sailing question, comment, or concern to go to the Piano Finders guest line, 1-800-878-PLAY. Once again, 1-800-878-7529 as we talk more sailing. And we wrap up the America's Cup, which, as we just heard, was retained by the holders, New Zealand. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, sharing a bit of the conversation between Los Angeles Yacht Club members and Sir Robin Knox Johnson, founder of the Round the World Clipper Race, a chat we had that was presented by the flag officers and directors of LAYC on Zoom with me as host. Eric Karras made a comment that it was absolutely remarkable for Jean LeCam to recover Kevin.
I thought he did brilliantly. Jean LeCam, I thought he did brilliantly. He was going up on deck to say, I think maybe I'll go to see if I can see a light in his life raft. You know, he didn't have to go on deck, but he did. And the next thing you know, he's found him and he's got him on board. I thought it was brilliant. And I suspect there's going to be a great deal of recognition of his feat. And he thoroughly deserves it.
Alistair Smith asked Sir Robin where his favorite area in the world was for cruising. And Sir Robin replied,
well, I tend to wander off to Greenland. East Coast. It's absolutely beautiful. And there aren't many people there, so you meet the odd Inuit, but not much. There's only 3,000 people live on that old, huge coast. One of my favourites would be the west coast of Scotland. I've never been to Croatia. I've only been to the Baltic with a tall ship's race. So I've spent all my life rushing around the world and never stopping to take a look. So I've got some sailing to do because I need to go and explore some of these places properly instead of rushing past them.
Mark DeLiva told Robin that he is going to be on the Round the World Clipper race on the 2022 and 2023 race, doing legs 1, 2, and 3, and that he has been hooked on this race much to the angst of his wife.
Mark, I'll look forward to meeting you, but just explain to her what you learned in the training just to put her mind at ease.
Jim Call mentioned that he is delighted to hear that he is the oldest soul to have done this race. It was an experience of a lifetime, and he is still active sailing at the age of 81.
Well, you're the same age as me. You see, the thing was, Jim, I could hardly turn you down, could I? Because I was the same age. So I had to let you come on the race. So, anyway, just keep sailing. I still am, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. Well done.
It's always a delight to have a conversation with Sir Robin Knox Johnson. We've had many conversations with him here on Sailsport Talk. Go to sailsporttalk.com and search for Sir Robin Knox Johnson for these conversations. You will be delighted to hear what he has to say. With his vast experience sailing around the world many times and as a founder of the Round the World Clipper Race, he has actually been a part of sailing life for all of most of our lifetimes, and we are so happy to be able to have him as a friend here on Sailsport Talk.
Rick Tittle back with you on Sports Byline USA, American Forces Radio Network, Titillating Sports, Hour 1 on a Tuesday, SalesportTalk.com with Karen Lyle, and we are joined by Christopher Kane, America's Cup expert. So, Christopher, explain to us the process of qualifying. How does it work? What if, you know, Malta or Spain or Portugal says, hey, we want to be in this. We have a boat that'll beat all of you. Give us a chance. How does that work?
The first step, as we mentioned in the last segment, was you appoint a challenging yacht club. And the challenging yacht club is the representative for all the challengers, and they negotiate the next cup with the defender, the team that just won. Now, the reason that happens is...
Well, sorry to interrupt one second. Who appoints it, the sailing commission or New Zealand?
Oh, well, you're going to love this. So it's technically the Royal Yacht Squadron because they sponsor the team. So the Royal Squadron and the other Royal Squadron will negotiate it because basically after every cup, they rip up the rules and build a whole new set of rules. And, of course, no chicanery goes on at all during this process.
Right, none.
So what happens is you have these two yacht clubs basically negotiate the terms for the next America's Cup. Now, who can challenge? Anyone can challenge as long as you are sponsored by a yacht club that is on a arm of the sea. So the Albuquerque Royal Yacht Squadron sadly will not be able to challenge the next America's Cup. This actually came into contention in 87 when Chicago challenged for the America's Cup as one of the American syndicates. And there was some debate as to whether Chicago was on an arm of the sea. And it actually went to court, as the America's Cup often does. And they were able to prove that if you wander through the lakes and up into Canada and out to the Atlantic, that Chicago is indeed on an arm of the sea. So those are the two, you know, major requirements. You have to be sponsored by a yacht club, and the yacht club has to be an arm of the sea. It's one of the things that sadly they get wrong in Sail, the movie, Wind. So that basically is it. But the other challenging syndicates have to just sit there and twiddle their thumbs and wait while, in this case, the British syndicate and the New Zealand syndicate figure out what the rules are. And
they
then
said that it's going to be about 8 months.
It's close to a year. Mm-hmm. That they're generally this time around, shockingly, pretty clean. But more often than not, it winds up in court at some point, and then you start challenging, and you tender your challenge to the Kiwis in this case, and once you accept, you got to give them a big check, and then after a certain period of time, you have to give them another big check, and then you scramble to find what sailors are left. So what tends to happen after the deed of gift is written, the rules are written for the next cup, you'll see a stampede by any syndicate that is thinking about challenging to start rounding up sailors. And then the whole circus starts again.
So also we have to mention that the team that is going to be basically running their challenge, which usually is about 100 people, both sailors and designers, and usually gets formed into a corporation, has to have enough money to be able to carry it off. And we had a couple of teams, the Stars and Stripes down in Long Beach. I think Malta was considering doing one. And they weren't able to raise the money. And so I think it's interesting that the emphasis this time around is to lower the cost by not having so many boats that are designed and make it possible for more teams to compete.
Absolutely. And that's what we all want from the Cup. We want a highly competitive Cup. I mean, we unfortunately, you know, had some races in San Francisco in 2013 where there was only one boat on the course because there was so few syndicates and sometimes there was trouble getting the boat in the water. That's not a great look. So I definitely want to see more teams coming in. I'd like them, you know, to get this wrapped up in terms of the negotiations between the challenger and the defender of record, you know, within a year. And I'd like to see this starting up faster and the boats starting to get distributed to the new teams. I think if you can see it, the biggest problem that Stars and Stripes had this time around is one of those big things that a corporate sponsor will look at is, do you have a boat in the water? And there's going to be used boats that you can put in the water and you can start getting your crew spooled up on, and that's going to make it a lot easier for sponsors to come in. But at the end of the day, we want more boats, because more boats is better competitive racing. Can you imagine a Formula One race with just Lewis Hamilton running around the course? That's not a lot of fun.
So what were the celebrations like in Auckland, New Zealand? Because I know with COVID, obviously there's some restrictions, but did they set cars on fire like we do in America?
No, they don't. They're very respectful about it. Excuse me, sir, are you using that car? No, I mean, you got to remember, there are two national sports in New Zealand, sailing and rugby. So, you know, they're going to get a huge ticker tape parade, and it's a huge celebration. And the country, you know, every cup race, the country basically shuts down at 3 o'clock. All the stores shut down, and everybody goes and watches the cup. So this is one of their Super Bowls.
All right, we do have a caller. We have Patty in San Francisco. Patty, you're on with Christopher and Karen.
Hi. Hi, Rick and Chris, her and Karen. I want to know, if you can tell me, I've heard rumors that they might have the competition in the UK rather than keeping it in New Zealand. And I really want to be there wherever it is. Is there any word on where it is going to be held?
We've heard Bahrain. We've heard New Zealand. And then this weird rumor over the weekend that the British and the New Zealanders were debating doing a one-off race for the next America's Cup just between them, which, remember, they can write the rules, so they can choose to do this, and do it around the Isle of Wight. And the reason that is important is the Isle of Wight is where the very first race that kind of gave birth to the America's Cup happened. The America's Cup is not named after America, the country. It's named after America, the boat, which won a famous race around the Isle of Wight. And that's what kicked off this whole circus. So, yeah, you're right, Patty. There was a rumor over the weekend that they were actually thinking about doing a one-off race between just the British and the Kiwis around the Isle of Wight, which I think would be terrible. But then again, the way that the cup is written, the defender and the challenger of record can pretty much make up whatever they want.
Well, Emirates Team New Zealand basically gave an announcement about some very important factors of how this would proceed. And one of the things they said is that there are a number of different options, but it is intended that the venue for the match will be determined within 6 months of the dates of racing announced in the protocol, if not before. So we might actually find that we know where this is going to be before 6 months from now.
We could.
Patty, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Piano Founders guest line is 800-878-PLAY. Christopher, you said that you don't want to see the boats change again. I'm sure there are some out there who kind of look forward to the new designs. Is it just because is it too maddening to keep up? But why do you want to keep them another cycle with the same relative design?
Because it'll double the number of challengers. You know, it's every time they go to a new boat, before you even put the boat in the water, you have to spend $20 to $30 million just designing it. There's a reason that two of the first corporate partners that always get whacked off the table immediately are Boeing and Airbus, because they have the software and the air tunnels that you need to do fluid design. So the first two corporate sponsors that always get taken off the table are Airbus and Boeing. There's only Airbus and Boeing. So, you know, the fact is, if they go to a new type of boat, that's $20 million table stakes to even start to think about building a boat. And that just immediately eliminates a ton of teams that would like to get in but just don't have that kind of payroll. As, you know, Karen just said, these are 100, 200 people syndicates that you got to run for 4 years. Half of those 4 years you spend in a foreign country where basically you invade them for 2 years. So that's expensive. And then you got to figure out how to design and build a brand new boat. And it's just really expensive. It shouldn't be about who can win on a computer screen. It should be about who can win on the water. And so that's why I want them to see them. And look, I've been very clear. I'm not a huge fan of these boats, but I want to see them stay with these boats so they can get more teams in the next cup.
Well, I'm going to say that I am a fan of these boats now. I really I can love more than one Christopher. I want to see them race because I also want the racers to have more experience with them so that we can really see them push the limits and what they can do with it. You know, I'd like to see, you know, how they solve the problem that we had with the American Magic team boat, you know, nearly capsizing just because of, you know, a moment of wind that, you know, puffs through. I mean, how are they going to change the design or learn to maneuver as a team to be able to really push it, but yet not have that happen? I mean, that's interesting. And also the fact that we've had a crash gives us a little bit of that. It's the same kind of excitement you have when you see a tightrope walker. You know that, you know they can fall, right?
Well, we don't watch NASCAR for the races. We watch NASCAR for the crashes.
Well, it's true. But, you know, it was pretty dramatic what happened with the American Magic team. And,
yeah, Christopher, I wanted to ask you that. How humiliating is it when you come back with the American Magic team and they say, what knocked your boat into the water? And the answer was wind.
Yeah, it's but that's that's back to what Karen was saying. You know, they start alerting these boats. Honestly, I think these boats can go even faster if they go another cycle with these boats. I think you're going to see another 5 to 7 knots coming out of these boats.
I do believe so.
But it's look, this happens every time you got a new cup. Don't forget, Oracle in 2013 crashed their boat just outside of the Golden Gate. Because they got hit with a combination of wind and tide and just couldn't do it fast enough. And as these wings and these sail plans get more and more powerful, the amount of force they generate and the speed with which they load up is so dramatically different than the old soft sails that Karen and I grew up with. They power up very quickly, and they're very hard to dump power quickly. It's not humiliating at all that it happened. People actually understand the stresses and the power in these boats. Yeah, I don't look at that as what were you doing. That's just an inevitable outcome of a brand new boat being raced to the edge.
That's Christopher Kane and alongside Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com. Go there, check it out. Karen and Christopher, thank you for the recap on the America's Cup, and we look forward to speaking with you when new winds blow new races. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Rick.
Rick, we'll be talking to you next week.
Sounds good. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break, and we'll see you on the other side.